everyone. I'm Dr. Max, and welcome to the Her Story, Her Journey podcast, where we highlight the extra that's in every woman. I'm so glad you joined us today as we spotlight Kati Chigalu-John. Kati, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am originally from Congo, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, but they call it now Zaire. Well, they used to call it Zaire when we migrated and fled the country. And by way of New York, raised in New York by my mom and my bonus dad. I'm not going to call him a stepdad. I have three siblings, and I am a mom to two beautiful girls. And I am a wife. But most importantly, I am Kati first on the journey of self-discovery. But I am in my mid-40s. I'm excited about that, because that's the journey of discovery. College graduate, definitely. Going back to school, trying to figure out where I want to do. But I'm just excited to be here to talk to you, Dr. Max, because I know you know me since I was 19 years old, I believe. That's the first time you met me. So it's pleasant to be here with you.
Well, yeah, I have known you since you were about 19, and I was like a big sister at that time, just always trying to get into your business and telling you what to do and giving advice, even when it was unsolicited. So I've been doing this advice thing for a long time. I know a little bit of your story, but what I want to do today, because our aim is to take the story that from the people that we see every day that we think are ordinary, and to use that story to show when you had to show extraordinary effort to get through something that was challenging for you. So, Kate, what story are you sharing with us today?
Today, I'm going to share my story of my daughter, Zion. Zion was born premature at 24 weeks, and we were stationed. We're a military family. My husband's a veteran. We were stationed in Fort Wainwright, Alaska, and I was at work, and my water broke. And at 20 weeks, the medevac me to the hospital, and I was able to keep her in for 24 weeks more. I didn't even keep her in. She was ready to come out whether I lay on that bed or not. So that's the story we're going to share today, the journey of Zion, what it taught me, where we are, and the strength it took to, and, you know, strength and prayers that took for her to be alive today and flourishing. That's the story I'm sharing today.
All right. So what was it like? What did that feel like? I mean, I have three healthy boys who were born just big, fat, early, and late, stayed in there, didn't want to come out. So for me, my journey was a little bit different. What was that journey like? Because I can't even begin to imagine what it would be like to know that I have this wonderful life inside of me that I've had all these dreams and all these plans for. And now I'm being told that there's something that might be wrong or something that might prevent this life from coming. What was that like for you?
You know, what's interesting about that journey was because of the trauma I've experienced earlier, I always live outside of myself when I'm faced with things that are difficult. I don't know how to put that. It's like I was there, but I wasn't fearful. And I didn't register, like, until it happened. Then it registered when I was able to actually see her. I had so many fears, and I blame myself. I really blame myself. Like, what did you do? Like, is she going to be alive? Is she not understanding that how big the situation was? You know, it wasn't until, you know, we were in the NICU for a good 4 months, from 1 pound, 5 ounces to six pounds and 7 ounces before they released her and be able to have a different oxygen level. But that experience of giving birth, because I thought I was prepped for a C-section because my oldest had she was a C-section baby. And I knew it was going to be high risk pregnancy. This is where this is a whole other conversation about doctors not listening to Black women. I knew it was going to be high risk pregnancy. I had an amazing doctor in the private sector. I contacted her to move forward my record, to communicate with my doctor, but the doctor was not really receptive. And I'm in a military setting where I'm just learning how to navigate through that. And by the time I had my water broke, it was too late. And then I started blaming myself, were there signs that I didn't see, were that I should have paid attention to? Did I not advocate enough for this pregnancy? Because I'm expecting to have a Christmas Eve baby, and I had a baby born on September 6th. And when we got to the hospital, I had an amazing doctor who was like, you know, we're going to try to keep her in as long as we can. Again, I'm like, you know, bed rest and I'm okay. That experience of giving birth to a child that did not cry, coming out of, like, vaginally delivering a baby. Mentally, I wasn't prepared how small she would be because you're so used to full size babies. Yeah. So I wasn't prepared to that. All I saw was even the top of her head because I was still trying to survive the blood hemorrhage, you know, the afterbirth that wouldn't come out. That was supposed to be just a small surgery, ended up being a life altering surgery because I almost died also as well during that process. So my poor husband is trying to survive. Don't know if his kid is going to be alive or his wife is going to be alive. So it was that traumatic experience. So I never even got to deal with the impact of that surgery and how much that took a toll on me. I went in survivor mode once I saw my daughter laying in that, you know, in the NICU. And I really kept looking at it, struggling. And it wasn't until a coworker of mine came down from Fairbanks, Alaska, which is a 6-hour drive. She drove down to come and see me. And she was a praying woman. Misty, she's no longer with us. And I'll never forget her because I still check on her kids and so forth. Missy showed up and they allowed her to come and see Zion. And she looked at Zion and she was like, oh my God, she's so perfect. And wow. I don't know what it is about Missy saying that. She was perfect. That shifted something in my heart and mentally. And I went straight into survival mode.
And survival mode for her or survival mode for you? Okay.
For her. Because again, I'm not thinking about me. I'm not thinking that, hey, you just went through a very crazy surgery process and we had to keep you away from your daughter for a while just so you could survive before you could even enter the NICU. It didn't even register that way. And from that day, like subconsciously, I made a decision that if this child makes it, he's going to make it because we've tried everything and I've advocated the best way that I can. And if she doesn't make it, either way, I like to know that I've done everything possible to make sure that I gave her every opportunity medically and being present as a mother. And I remember meeting a nurse in there and she told me that you have the right to ask any question in this space. You have the right to create a team that you want around her. And what that team looked like is up to you. And no one can tell you otherwise. Yes, they could come in with medical stuff and trying to talk all that jargon to you. And obviously they're going to say whatever they can recommend, but you have the right to take your time and pull back and tell them and say, I need to make a decision, provided it's not dire, that they need to make it, you know, that's going to impact her life in a different kind of way. And literally that's how I started that whole journey of staying in the survival mode for Zion in the NICU. It was not easy, but so worth it. But it took a lot. It impacted my marriage, my relationship with my husband. I shut down to the world. Nobody knew what was going on with me. It's like nothing outside of that NICU existed. I was literally not even right on the hospital campus in the room that was provided for us. I was back and forth. One of the nurses told me, like, you know, breast milk is important to a baby's wealth. My body wasn't prepared to produce milk because I had a baby at 24 weeks. My cousin from Canada, Eddie, you know, brought me, you know, a pumping machine. I just started massaging my breast area. I started pumping milk and so willing Kate, my body to.
One of the things I want to ask you, you said something that was just, it kind of resonated with me when you said, in there, I made a vow to advocate for her, because you, in the beginning, kind of asked yourself, did I not fight enough when I was pregnant with her? Mm-hmm. But once I recognized that she was here and she was so perfect, and that woman almost gave you permission to go back in and fight and to be an advocate. Tell me mm-hmm. about that process.
I don't know what it is about what Missy said. She was so perfect that something ignited in me. My natural fighting survival spirit. I think it probably stemmed from looking at my mother in a refugee camp in Zambia, flooding in the middle of the night, leaving everything that you own at 8 years old, and surviving going to a foreign country and being incarcerated for being a foreigner, and eventually ending up in the United States and surviving. But that survival story also maybe translated to who I was, because that journey started for me at 8 years old. By the time I got to the United States, where I was 11, the year I turned 11, and having to survive as an immigrant of all the trials and tribulation that you didn't think you were going through. And by the time, and then just being a young mom, you know, I had Ashanti when I was, you know, 19, turning 20. You don't realize what life prepares you for. For all of this stuff that I've been through, not realizing what's to come. You know, my gosh, sister always tell me God only challenges the strongest. I'm like, listen, I don't need for him to challenge me, because I'm tired of being challenged. Not this type of challenge. So he wanted to give you Zion to any other parent but you. I said, well, I would have preferred that she's through birth. And I think that resonated with me, because I didn't know any other way to be when I'm faced with trial and turbulence and turbulations around me, or trial and, you know, circumstances around me. I just know how to survive. Is I instinctively go into my head and just clicks, like, I need to survive, and I don't know why. But, like, you know, as we're learning and we're growing up, like, trauma have many way of impacting us, and we didn't know. And I obviously didn't know.
So what's some ways that you can say, because you said you learned a lot about yourself. We know that you talked about the preparation and the different events that you had, but still you learned some things about yourself in the process. What's one strength that you learned about yourself during this time?
Oh, I can make a whole room of doctors feel like they're the smallest people. I can, ooh, this, when you look at your parents, how they navigate the world, my bonus dad was that person. Papa could walk into a room and he never punished us. He talked to us. He had a way of, you know, and you don't realize you pick up on that. You know, it was just the confidence level that I said, I'm the mother. She's my child. And I have the right to be in this space where we're discussing her care, what that means for us and what that means for her. And building those relationships, and I didn't need to tarnish the relationship. I didn't need to belittle them, because I know when you work in the NICU, you are a special kind of doctor, you're a special kind of nurse to be in those spaces, because it's not for the faint of heart. So it's building those relationships and understanding that I'm going to be present here every day at that bedside. I'm going to do the kangaroo care, because my daughter needs to know my skin. She needs to feel my skin, and she needs to hear my heartbeat, and she needs to help me make this milk, so I could feed her and she could be healthy, because I know that's going to be healthy for her brain eventually. And I needed to do that. And it was just me understanding, once they realized, oh, this is not a typical Black woman. Yeah, my accent may be strong, all that stuff may become, but you know what? It is what it is. But I'm going to ask the questions and I'm going to hold you accountable. And one of your nurses come at me sideways, but we're talking about my child as if I don't know anything. We're not going to be okay with that. So I'm not going to be your stereotypical Black woman you assume all Black women are. So it literally is, okay, I'm educated. I may not know a lot, but I could educate myself in this space to make sure that this child have every opportunity. And I'm going to make you do your job. It's not that in the NICU space and not do it, because I know they go above and beyond. But my baby was brown. There's a deficit in so many ways that could have went left because she was a brown baby. And I needed to make sure I spoke up for her.
And so you found your voice.
I found my voice.
This helped you to find your voice.
And that voice has been sustaining me since, ever since.
Inside that bad darkness is always some light.
Yeah. Right?
But I wanna talk to you a little bit also, because we talk about the highs and then we sometimes hide the lows. And then those who look at us have this misconception that we're the strong, you know how to take care of all of that. And when they're not being strong, they think there's something's wrong with them. So I want to just keep it real and ask you, what are some of the lows and some of the parts of you that also show? I know you found your strength, but what were some of the other weaknesses you found?
I wish I had asked for help. I'm not good at that.
Thank you for sharing that.
We don't know how to ask for help. Even though in those rooms I was strong, when I got in that room, I felt all the aches in my body. Mentally, I was so drained, and I feel like I should have sought out mental health to help me cope with what I was facing. It has impacted me physically because I shut down with eating. I shut down connecting with people because you're in that survival space. And my family is thousands and thousands of miles away. What it taught me is, even though I'm strong, I am weak when it comes to take care of self-care. Because even though we're going through trials and tribulation, we have to understand that self-care and the human connection of people supporting. Yes, I was around amazing nurses who made sure I was okay. Like, they wanted to make sure I was okay. But that sisterhood that holds you up, I had shut down from that. Because, you know, that's a whole other, I'm sure, another conversation where we're so used to carrying our sisters. And, you know, I was just drained from everybody taking from me. So I was in this space of, this is my child, I'm going to survive. And I was drained from what I have allowed to happen, to, you know, people taking and not replenishing me. So as I was out there fighting for Zion, I was going back to an empty room where somebody wasn't feeding me. Like, hey, you're gonna be okay. There was prayers around the world. But I didn't have that space. Like, I don't even know how to put it into words. It's like, there's space only a sister or somebody, not somebody who's been through that, gets you. They don't need to say words. That bond, I struggle with that. I didn't realize how much impacted that shutting down to the world, how it impacts you emotionally, how it impacts you, how you navigate afterwards. I wish, I really, truly wish I had screamed, say, I am not okay. I am, what I'm going through is not okay. I need help. I need to go talk to somebody. And that was the last suggestion for anybody, because any parent who've had to, because we had to resuscitate Zion 3 times in the hospital. Can you imagine standing there, they're trying to bring your baby back to life? And just standing there. And going back to the room 2 days later, you know, and I discovered that, you know, I'm scared. I was scared, but I masked it so well. Because I'm asking because I know how to enter a room. I know how to navigate a room. I know how to advocate. I know how to ask the questions. I could function in a high stress environment where everything is so clear. But when I go back in a room, I'm self-doubting everything that I was questioning. I was self-doubting myself because I wasn't too sure of all the spaces that I was in. So, yeah, it was not easy. It was definitely not easy. But when you start discovering that, yeah, you're not that strong.
That was powerful.
Not that strong.
That recognition of I should have asked for help is a powerful, powerful step to growing, to recognizing that you can't do it on your own. And as you were talking about the need to be with someone, I had a vision of, in the same way you said, I needed to kangaroo love on her. It is that without words, connection, skin to skin. Sounds like that's the sisterhood connection you needed. There's no words needed. It is that
No.
hug, it is that unfolding, it is that skin to skin that will say, I got you.
I
I'm
got you.
here. I'm here. Well, thank you for sharing that. Thank you for sharing that. So, where are you in Zion now in your journey?
Well, Zion is 11 and amazing. So we went from obviously because she was born at 24 weeks, your skull is not fully developed. So since we have vaginal delivery, she ended up having a brain hemorrhage that turned, have not permanently turned into a cyst. Neurologically, she is about 6 years old, but you know, we know God has the last say so. But we still have a lot of visits, you know, because obviously I took advantage of early interventions. Went from the NICU on, I make sure I was educated on how to take care of her. Just massages and stuff like that. When we came out, making sure that all their specialty continues. So it's very important as your child is maturing that you can still advocate and advocacy evolve. When they're babies, it's easier. Early child, you know, before they turn three is easier, but once they get an education system is another advocate type of advocacy that you have to kind of take on. So educating yourself, just understanding the law around IEPs. Surrounding yourself with a team because I'm very clear on all its neurologists. We see a neurologist every 6 months. We see a developmental pediatrician like every other 3 months to 6 months sometime. She's in physical therapy. She's in occupational therapy. Right now we do some, you know, mental health because obviously COVID has impacted her and verbally she can't express what's going on, but we see it in the behavior. You know, her anxiety is heightened, her OCD has taken over because she needs to feel a sense of control in something. And she's in ABA therapy where, you know, we work on behavior and I chose to homeschool her to create an environment where I'm not going to keep sending her in an environment, a public school system that keep traumatizing my kid and just passing her along as if she's not a human being. So there's some hard decisions that you have to make along the way, but those decisions have created this amazing human being who was funny, very straightforward. Don't bring any fire to her because you know that smoke. She's a different kind of being. Health wise, she's doing amazing. She's obviously with her medical history, she's a high immunocompromised person. So, but you know what we're learning through this process for her as I'm watching her withdrawing in. Who was so independent and very, you know, full of life when, you know, everything pre-COVID to see her shrinking back in. Now I'm like, you know what? I gotta find the balance of she gotta live. We can't keep ice because she's a social kid. She's not meant to be in. So, but Zion, you know, her health is much better. We still have to follow those specialties, and we just like any parent trying to figure out how to create the balance where we still get the right balance socially wise and still keep her safe in this space. But she's good.
And I know for you, Kate, you also, and I know Zion is good because, you know, that's my girl. She's
Behind your
always
back.
catching up with me. But I also know that you've taken some of those lessons you've learned, and you are now beginning to show other women how to advocate. Tell
So
me more.
what
Tell us more about that.
When I was, we were in the NICU with Zion, I would see the nurses come to me like, hey, there's a parent who just came in. Even though my situation is dire, what I learned in helping others, it helps you as well. And they would come to me, hey, I just think maybe you could talk to her because I know you've been sitting here and stuff like that. So it started out that way. And then as we move from one location, the military families always move every 3 years, they're stationed somewhere. And I realized, and some of those people, they were attaching me to were military spouses who were very young. And I have a sense of who I was. I didn't get married until my mid-30s. I had a career and all that type of stuff. So I had a great sense of who I was. I had a foundation of my my being as a woman. So when I married my husband, it was different for me. And some, you know, and when you have a young soldier who doesn't understand, you know, hierarchy is so important, they really practice that. It started out that way, just me talking to parents who have special need kids through the military. And it born out of that is teaching women that you have voices. Just because somebody tell you something about your child, you don't, it's that even if you believe it and you understand that, now here's a step that you could take. After you process it, after you figure it out, you know, after you kind of marinate in it, here's the work that now you have to do. And it's not going to be easy. And it's just general conversation. And I've just become, you know, hey, we have this person. Oh, here's some resources that, you know, here that we have. As a matter of fact, I just did that with my neighbor who just moved from Arizona. And she came and introduced herself out of the blue, not knowing that I had a child, you know, who have all these amazing abilities. And we, you know, and I was like, oh, you know, and, you know, I just say, hey, here's some information here. And that information is a godsend. Every time you move somewhere, you have to start over. And you never know what's good services, what's negative services. It's just, it's like moving it forward.
And what about the research, or was it the law that you were instrumental in getting something changed? Because you used forward also.
Yeah, in the state of Colorado, I was part of a panel that discussed during COVID, you know, we saw what was going on in the world, and a discussion started happening around autism. What's going to happen if they get stopped, but there's no identity. As a matter of fact, another law just passed for ID that we were part of discussion around that. And the law is around police interaction with a person with different ability, what that would look like. In particular, person who have autism who may not have the language, you may look like they're not being responsive, or, you know, they might be having a meltdown, a behavior they just, you know, how do you interact with that? Because I know we require police to do so much, and that's the area. So now the bill that was passed requires that police go through training, mandatory training, not just, you know, on for a couple hours. It's going to be mandatory training. We're still in the process. The panel just finished coming up with a recommendation to the police department. That's just from the academy on to when they become police officers, they have to be recertified every couple of years to make sure they continue with the education. They're partnering up with the social services and, you know, to create a support system that's going to interact with this. Not just autism, it's also other, you know, disabilities that, you know, people face, is how to interact in those spaces and support them in that services, and then create the funding to kind of come behind that. So we were very instrumental in that. I was really excited about that. And I was like, maybe I should go on the judicial side of, of policy stuff. I'm kind of liking this. You know, find out which Congress, listen, our taxpayers paying those Congress people. How do I partner up and figure out how to make sure? Because if I'm feeling a deficit and it's like what I'm working, yes, I'm empowering parents, but I'm realizing, oh, when we make our Congress people accountable and we create enough movement and make enough noise and they're voting stuff, you know, when re-election is on the line, they're willing to listen. They are willing to listen. And if you create a movement, especially, there's nothing more powerful than mothers. Go out there.
And that's the truth. I love that. There's nothing more powerful than mother. Kate, it has been an amazing, amazing opportunity and an honor for me that you were willing to share your story and your journey. And to see where that moment, where it was a dark moment, where it felt like you had nothing left, that you reached down, you found something extra, and use that, and now we're moving forward. I so look forward to hearing the continuance of your journey and what's coming up for you next. And we're actually going to wrap up now, but before we do, I'd like you, Kate Shikalujan, to tell another woman who is going through that story, who thinks, I'm the only one going through this, you know, these other people are going through something bigger, and no one understands. what would you tell that woman?
Ask for help. You don't have to carry the load by yourself. You truly don't. In the space that you're in, find somebody that's going to push you in the right direction or steer in the right direction, and create the support system that you want to see. Your sisterhood is everything. And especially as we're maturing in our ages, you realize that group is so much more smaller. Sisterhood is a language that don't need to be, like, you don't even need to say anything when you have that right sisterhood. Ask for help. You don't have to do it by yourself. There's so many resources. Look it up online, whatever works for you. You know, if you don't want to share with other people, you feel like you want to be in an anonymous situation, go in those spaces. Because you are not alone. You are not, what you're facing, you're not alone. And you're going to be okay. You're really going to be okay because you're going to learn just how strong you are, and you're going to learn all about yourself. And you're going to figure out what your strength and where your weaknesses are. And you're going to be forever changed from that. And plus, you got it. You're a woman. Your name is woman. God gave you the power to create life. How amazing is that? You got it.
All right. Well, we just finished listening to Kati Shkalujan share her story of how she had to pull on that extra inside of her when her daughter Zion was born significantly prematurely and almost died. I just love featuring the extra that shows up when we women are challenged in our ordinary lives. Thanks for joining us on the Her Story, Her Journey podcast. I'm Dr. Max, and if you want to share your story, or if you know a woman who would like to, please send me a DM on Instagram at herstory.herjourney. That's herstory.herjourney. And remember 2 Corinthians verse 10, for when I am weak, then I am is strong.